When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, families and friends, gather around the iPhone. It's time for another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
Like
and here
the,
we
like
are.
I like that you've adjusted from broadcasting to iPhone.
Gather around that iPhone.
Our guest, Gina Grad. Everyone on the Corolla platform knows Gina. And explain, Bob, what you used to do, what you used to say, and why you said it.
Well, because I listened to old-time radio thing on Sirius XM.
Oh,
I love
nice.
That old radio and Sherlock Holmes.
The 40s thing?
40s radio. And
I'm going to fix that.
Yeah, there fix you go. My microphone. There is that go. Better? So, and they always like, dun-da-da-dun.
Yeah,
it's
like
always a big
barkers.
Blast coming out of the radio.
Absolutely.
The beginning of the thing. Advertisement. Now it's like, hey, man, we're here. We're going to stick something up our noses.
I hate that.
We're going
to
say, you know.
That's the cool way to talk now. Like, yeah. I'm too animated for everything.
You have clear voice.
You have to have the glut of, you're just supposed to talk like this.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, really good to see you. Thanks.
Drew, what is your take on radio these days?
Radio is alive and well.
Thank you.
You know this.
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
Radio's never going away.
I know.
But radio
but,
is one
but,
of the best.
But the idea is, so it was very novel what Howard Stern was doing.
Absolutely.
On terrestrial radio 20 years ago. Drew and I don't listen to Howard anymore.
Yeah.
You're over
so,
it.
Yeah, I don't find it funny anymore.
Okay.
So, but there was something so powerful about this guy who just talks like no one's ever talked before.
Yeah.
Then other people started doing it and it became a genre. Now it's just imitation. It's very much
it's
like
deluded.
In music. I was a musician, mm-hmm. right? So Nirvana was a very good band. But because they were so successful, you got 100 bands that sounded like them
right.
that couldn't write songs like that guy.
This is true.
And you right yeah. now have dozens of morning radio shows of people who can do all the shtick but aren't funny
well,
like
and
Howard or Adam are.
Agreed. Just, agreed.
Well, let's describe. Gina is, people who don't know Gina Grad, she is... What would you call your news on Adam Carolla?
Yeah, I do the news, kind of lend the third voice on the show.
Adam Carolla Show. So yeah. Get that at adamcarolla.com. And then you've got a morning radio program.
Yeah, on 100.3 The Sound. It's a classic rock station. So it was Mark in the Morning with Mark from Mark and Brian back in the day out
yeah.
here. And now it's Andy and Gina and classic
so
rock.
So that's what I thought we'd talk about is radio because it very much is like I travel a lot, mm-hmm. so any market you're in, there's the morning guys that are gonna
yeah, but that's
do
been
that
way.
Schtick.
But that was there well before Howard. Howard just took that genre and made it something of a elevated sort of art form.
Absolutely.
You know what's similar? Yeah. Channel 5 News here in L.A., KTLA started doing it all loosey-goose. Now
yeah.
everybody does
yeah.
it.
It was actually
we're just
morning.
Casual.
Yeah,
we're just your friend. Invite us into your kitchen. Yeah, totally.
It's why is something when it's great have to be copied and copied down to when it doesn't mean anything
because
anymore.
I don't mean to sound super jaded, but I think it's right to say people are following the money, right? So if you do something that's completely, you know, unlike anything you've seen before, you see people flocking to it. You see sponsors going, well, if that's where the eyeballs and ears are, here, I'll take
it,
some
it,
money.
It is true of any media.
Yeah.
Whether it's music or radio or television. Look at television. I mean, my God. And you know, when I was...
But I always thought there was more freedom in radio.
There mm-hmm. is more freedom, but there's ideas about mm-hmm. there are people that manage radio that have ideas about how it needs to be done, and there are people that are more willing to take risk and that are, but it's gotten because it's been very much consolidated and become more conservative over the last few years.
So actually. What's funny about me and I listen to radio all the time, XM and Sirius.
XM is not radio.
It is
that is not radio. That is not radio.
Well, let me tell you how it happened. I was a messenger in L.A. I listened to Howard on the 91, whatever. I was there that day when the movie came out, when they had the appearance at the Palace and stuff like that. I was
Private
a fanatic.
Parts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a fanatic about it. And he liked Perry Farrell, and I got to be around. And it was a weird world. Like, it was like an explosion of reality. So I got Sirius or XM, whichever it was, when he went there. Mm-hmm. I ended up, after 6 months or a year, year and a half, fading away from that. I don't know if it's because I grew up or I don't know what it is, but I got obsessed with old time radio, and I just listened to, you know,
like Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yeah. Okay. And Jack Benny.
The Shadow.
And The Shadow, right. And Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm the old dude that like buys them on CDs through the website, the good old time radio website.
So that's the new punk rock then, right? Going all the way back to the beginning and the purity of it. And they were so squeaky clean, but there was something really, really cool about it. There were radio plays.
Really something special about it.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's
well, theater of the mind. And now everything is so explicit that it's nice to have something that just sort of makes you drift into a...
Well, Serial, the most popular podcast in the world, is very much like those. It's just a way classier NPR version of those old radio shows.
The episodic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever listen to Serial?
I didn't like it. And
well,
I did not, sorry.
And, do you like it? Do you like it?
But,
of course.
But here's what happened
to
me.
Now you're going to say, I wasn't really into Making a Murderer. I don't really care what happens to Brandon Dassey. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was into it, and I was reporting on it, but I actually interviewed all the players.
Oh, my God.
And you know, the one guy that everyone hated was actually a sex addict, opiate addict, and is now in recovery, the prosecuting attorney that did both cases.
Well, did you see Durst's defense?
That surprises me not at all,
why don't you... Oh, but he is...
That doesn't surprise me.
But he is way better, and he talks about things very clearly now in his recovery. And you should listen to my podcast where I get into that. I forget what episode it is.
I'm afraid, because I...
It'll blow it for you? You like your...
Yeah, I like my smoke and mirrors. So of course I'm going to listen to it. That's amazing. And how dreamy were the defense attorneys?
Oh, I didn't talk to them. Adam talked to them. You talked to them, too.
No,
didn't
I didn't
you?
Get to. Oh. It was on Reasonable Doubt. But
yeah, yeah.
I just,
but
I
they were in the
dreamy.
Bunker, weren't they? Didn't you get to see them over there
yeah,
by
I got
the
to,
kitchen area?
I literally got to pass them and avert my eyes.
Yeah.
That is such a strange compound he has.
No,
that's
it's
where
not,
you work.
Yes,
about,
and it's not
parole,
because of that.
About
it's because I was just so starstruck. All the ladies just got really into those
dudes. Why do you think what do you mean it's a strange compound?
It's like a car garage, and then he thought, well, I'm going to do my podcast out of here to save money, and then he built that box in the middle.
Yeah.
it's just so funny.
I think it's funny that you think it's
not
funny.
Saving
well, most
money.
People would like, if I'm going to have a podcast company, I'll like get a place on Wilshire where all the other podcast people are.
That's so not. Yeah, that's so off-brand for Adam.
No. We all have to go to Glendale. To
yeah. At a hall ass.
By the Home Depot.
Yeah. I live in the South Bay, by the way.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a little bit of a trek.
I was there when you did the first show at the Improv.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Wait, was I a fill-in?
You were kind of a fill-in, and I was like, Gina.
Because Susan was doing my hair and kept telling me to stop messing with it.
Yeah, and I was saying, Gina, your job is to make Adam look good. Just do whatever.
That was
just
really
respond
good advice.
To him. Focus on him. Focus, respond. Don't worry about anything else.
You're absolutely
and I,
right.
And I felt you making that adjustment during that particular event. Actually.
Really? You remember that?
Yeah, I do, because I thought, oh, she's got it. And that's when I knew you were going to get the job.
Oh, I love you. Yeah, thank you. So. Thank you for that, by the way. That's not a – people might think, oh, is Adam – is that, you know, almost like – is that a criticism? Is he that
– No, it's just
know?
How he works.
But he is – goes full force, and you're either on board
well,
or
but
you're
not. Many times in radio, you're asked to be a second – presence in, right. When you work with Adam, you're responding to him. In other words, it's not a team. It's a team, but it's a
how do
I don't
you
describe
explain it.
It's, yeah, it's, you're just sort of responding rather than. But then he complains that you're not generating as much as he is.
Well, you're a very important cog in a bigger machine,
yeah,
and that's
kind of,
you just roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, just, I've watched it for years. He's doing a TV show with a friend of mine. I'm waiting to hear the story.
What is the show?
Should I say it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Does it have a title
okay.
yet?
Okay.
He won't care.
It's something where it's cops, a TV show.
What?
So I'm blowing it. I'm telling something that he hasn't told you his friends.
Well, maybe we
I'll
have.
Pretend like I haven't heard
okay.
this.
Okay. Well, okay, so they're going to take cops episodes.
Yeah.
You don't know this?
And do what?
You guys are really
lucky. No, we know. We just want to make sure you know, Bob.
No, no, it's like Mystery Theater 3000. They just talk about the episode.
Well, no. Well, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
But the arrested people, Adam's going to meet with. And the cops, and they're going to talk about that, when that happened, what their lives are like from 5 or 10 years ago. You guys haven't heard this? How come Adam has not told you guys this?
This is the first time hearing of this.
Because it means it. I have a kind of an...
An inside track?
No. I just have sort of a negative reaction to that, the way you've described it.
Why?
No, no.
Why?
I feel the opposite.
No, listen. Only in the sense that it's not together yet in terms of... production, what it's going to need, and I know what Adam needs in terms of support to pull off something like that. I don't think a lot of people do. You probably know. And I'm looking at Gina, and so when you say, "Hey, they're just going to go do this thing," I'm like, "Oh,
not that easy."
Now, it's a great idea, and that's probably why we haven't heard about it yet, because he's probably complaining about the same thing.
And
until it's just right, he won't tell anybody.
You're absolutely right.
It was my idea from 5 years ago. This is how incest. You think that L.A. is the smallest town in the world? My friend Morgan does Cops, right? So
he's been on the show with his son, right?
Yeah,
Morgan. Father.
Yeah, John is the dad, and then Morgan's taking over. So Morgan and I are old friends. Don't ask how.
Clandestine meeting.
Prison.
Anybody who knows
car,
me,
I have an idea for a show.
Here's another problem. I was with some people at a fundraiser, and then we were standing around talking. And then somebody came up, and they were saying hi to this friend of mine, and then they were being very strange, and then they walked away. And he goes, "You know how weird it is being your friend." So now they're trying to figure out whether I'm a fucking drug addict or not.
No, prison, drug addict, or mental health professional. Those are the only three.
Those are your only
maybe
choices.
Maybe musicians. But only musician drug addicts.
Right. So I said, why don't we go back and try to find, because I think most of the people arrested on Cops are drug addicts and alcoholics. Mm. I bet you a lot of them have gotten sober and transformed themselves. Mm. So I said, why don't we go try to find them?
This is where are they now?
Where are they now? And so that kind of morphed. And I got lost in the shuffle, and now Adam's going to host it for some reason is what I've heard.
Well, I hope this happens, because this combines my two favorite things.
Cops and Adam?
Yes! Here's the thing. Well, and not necessarily cops, though. I'm a fan.
Criminality.
I have I am very passionate about the jail system and about prisons. And not in like a, I'm an advocate. No, I like the documentaries. I like the shows. I like jail. I like Cell 316. I like Lock Up, Lock Down, Lock Up Abroad.
What is that about?
Someone told me they would take me to tour.
Chrissy is like that. She'll watch them all.
Murder porn.
Murder
crime,
porn.
Crime porn.
That might be what it is.
No, but it's mostly about tough guys in jail.
Well, you know what it is for me? I'm obsessed with microcosms. Like, this is a world inside a world that has nothing to do with our society. It runs completely.
Why don't you come with Susan and watch Game of Thrones? it's also obsessing, but a little healthier.
But I love that. Even if it doesn't make you sad.
Most people in jail never had a chance to be anywhere else.
Absolutely, it makes me very sad. In fact, if I could do something, I thought about that before. If I could do something with a women's prison, but I've never been in prison.
You know,
I don't know anything about prison.
What stands out to me as it pertains to the legal system, the courts, and the jails, is doing this Teen Mom stuff. That it's stunning to me how so many people in our country have more frequent relations with the courts than with the healthcare system.
That makes sense.
Oh, for sure.
That's crazy.
Well, because the healthcare system would be preventative, right? And the courts are the last stop.
I guess, but why not? But I think I've been in a courtroom once, maybe.
What were you doing?
I was...
You got caught with a doob.
No.
I dare you to tell me it was something
back
else.
Back in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was... I had a lid in the back of the car.
You know what decade this was in.
No, it was I got accused of not obeying an officer, so I had to pay
to
court.
Really?
No.
Dr. Drew.
In Pasadena?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was ridiculous. It was terrible. And so anyway, that not interested in being in the courtroom otherwise. Well,
it's terrifying. You feel
so. How many of the teen moms have been in jail problems?
Yeah, Amber was in prison for 5 years. But the other, they all are constantly going to the judge about child stuff and divorce, and family courts, and boyfriends and domestic violence. Constantly with the attorneys.
Do they ever call you in?
No.
For those situations.
No, because I'm not their doctor. I host a talk show.
Yeah, but
where they show up once a year, twice a year. I'll be happy to.
Drew, you got some sway. Don't they think that?
Attorneys are smarter than that.
Are they?
Yes.
All right.
The viewers are not smarter than that. The viewers think somehow I'm their doctor and I'm there.
You're their father.
And how do you let them do
Absolutely.
This? And why do you put them on the show? I am not the producer. I'm not their. I'm not their father. I have a relationship with them. I care about them. I don't not care. It's just
you know what's strange to me because that's also another popular show at my house. So prison porn and.
Teen Mom.
People
right?
who are in trouble.
So I've been watching
Did you see the Well, you should look at the reunions I do.
Yeah, I saw one of them.
And realize that's 12 hours of recording down to that.
But when I'm sitting there having been on a reality TV show, on year five, you're making some good dough.
Yes,
and they're still
they are.
Acting like they're fucking living in a mobile home.
Don't they kind of have to?
Well, I think.
To keep the charade running?
No, I think they.
They're making $40,000 per episode, and they're acting like they're, oh, we got to get our Wick stamps from my mom.
I think some of it may be sort of in an escrow or something. There's something going on where they don't have access to a lot of this stuff.
Oh,
really?
Like a trust of some kind.
Or something. I don't know. I don't ask questions about that. But that was my sense of it.
Well, as long as we're on the subject of these reality TV shows.
I had to do porn in order to feed my baby.
Get that drop.
Put that on Adam's show.
Nate,
favorite. Email that to Gina.
Please, I'll need that. You can just, it's my new ringtone.
So then.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Think about that. They were saying that she was doing porn, and then they make ungodly amounts of money.
No, Farrah makes money. Farrah makes a lot of money. And she has lots of different things, and she's very businesslike, and she's very on top of
it. Yes, you know who she reminds me of? The other one, Waller's old girlfriend from the Laguna show. Lauren Conrad.
Oh, yeah.
They're go-getter, money-making fools.
Yeah.
You can tell.
God love them.
I wish I had just the teeniest bit of that in me.
Right? Oh, my God. And that's the other thing, because I completely betray all stereotypes of my Jewish culture. I'll pay you more if I can avoid this confrontation. I don't haggle. I don't bargain.
Let's talk about Gina's life. You don't know Gina.
Yeah.
Oh. So where'd you grow up?
Kansas City, in the suburbs of Kansas.
Which side?
The Kansas side.
Wow.
The one you see on Cops.
The barbecue
You never
side.
See the Missouri side.
Yeah.
But I grew up out in the
burbs. Plaza's on the Kansas side, right? The Plaza?
It's on the Missouri side.
Oh, geez.
That's where the fancies
yes,
live.
Yes, the Plaza.
So did you grow up thinking the Earth's been here like 300 years and dinosaurs and people lived together?
Had you in a
Yes, but...
Where'd you go to school? Oh, you were at the thing Adam and I were at Kansas, right?
Yes. I will not rest until I find that picture. I went to the University of Kansas.
Oh, and, there you go. Danny Manning.
Yeah.
Basketball, baby.
Yeah, basketball. That's a sport.
Well, Adam and I have a famous story at the University of Kansas at the – it's like a Johnny
– At the Lead Center.
Lead Center. It's a long story. I don't want to get into it. But we were there.
Long story short, it was horrible for them, and I was there.
And they bombed?
No, they were great, but they're getting there. They had to like ride in the back of some broke down car like in between a hamper. And it was a horrible experience.
Here's the thing. Right. I've seen that. They did a tour. When was that tour when you played in Las Vegas a few years ago? How many years ago? 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
Two and a half years ago. Summer.
So I see them. They kill it.
Of course.
Just kill it. But then in L.A., there was another one. I forget where it was I went. And what happens is if the audience isn't responding, and everybody in entertainment knows L.A. audiences are lame.
Yeah, bad.
Right? So it's not going in. I notice Adam gets so angry.
What?
Right? Then you become codependent with him because you can feel him getting angry that the crowd isn't responding.
Were you at the improv or something?
Yeah. Where, I forget where it was.
But it makes sense.
And it was so great in Las Vegas.
Yep,
it was
I get it.
Well, this, with the college stuff back in the day when we were on MTV, they were so appreciative and thousands
of
people.
Oh, my God.
Up.
I mean, it was all anybody talked about, all anybody cared about was Loveline. I was in the audience. I was in the balcony. I wore this is when I was wearing half shirts and big baggy jeans. I was wearing a Willy Wonka t-shirt. I have a picture. With you and Adam and my best friend and roommate at the time, Sarah, and I thought it was very cool because my dad had just moved to Los Angeles and to do radio, which he's been doing for 25 years. And I said, excuse me, Adam, my dad lives in California. He lives in Sherman Oaks. And I thought Adam was going to be like, oh, okay. And he goes, oh. I was mortified.
Susan's going to make this her life project. I was finding that.
I,
picture getting it up on the website. I guarantee
I've
you.
I begged my mom to turn over every drawer in my childhood bedroom.
Susan will show up at your house. Don't
that
worry.
Would be amazing. That picture exists. I had no eyebrows, a half shirt. I was a mess.
Well, I remember that.
Of course.
I don't remember the event, but I remember it being fun and good.
Good.
Did you like the song, Come On Eileen? I said, Come On Eileen.
No, more like we're trying to look like Fly Girls.
Yeah. Oh,
like, kind of that.
Like Left Eye,
yeah.
Lisa Left Eye.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the same.
This
you know
the
what?
90s. This is
weird.
Mid 90s.
I know. But the look of Dixie's Midnight Runners in the mid 80s is the same look that Lisa Left Eye had in TLC.
I gotta Google that.
It is. Big baggy pants with the back pants stick out with the belt.
Yeah.
The top is big and it's sticking out like the top.
By the way, Ellie Mae wore the same thing in the 60s.
One person said, that look, I'm going to go with that decade after decade.
Yeah, and it sucks. And we all bought into it.
Stonewashing high mom jeans.
Your dad left for work or your parents got divorced?
My parents got divorced in
she already said he's in radio, Drew. Yeah. Come on.
But they are best friends. My mom comes out here for Thanksgiving every year. They
Did
are
you
like
follow
attached
your dad
to the
out here? Is that what happened?
No, I think I was 15 when he moved out here. So did high school, did the University of Kansas, moved to New York for 2 years, got there 3 weeks before 9/11. Thumbs up. Oh. I was temping in Chelsea. I didn't know anybody.
You were right there.
We watched it from the window. The big wigs at the company said, if you have a private jet, if you have a private boat, I recommend you get on it. Half the building left. I'm a temp from Kansas. I just got here. I've no don't
Where
know
do you live?
Anybody. I live in Queens. There's no way to get there.
You walk?
Well, I had a couple friends living in Harlem, and they said, we'll drive down. We'll meet you at the bottom of the park.
Were the subways running at all?
No. So people are just running up the street covering their faces. And I finally got back to Queens, I think, 2 days
later.
What
a horrific experience.
I can't believe it. It doesn't even feel real anymore. I don't feel.
I mean, you're watching people jump. You can see people jumping out of the building at that distance.
And we used to go down because my friend worked. You were only allowed to go to Ground Zero if you live there. You work there. So we went down because we were dumb. And
right afterwards?
Yeah, 2 days later. Everything is still smoldering. The smell was horrible. I don't know what kind of burning metal I still have in my lungs. And we thought, we should get out of here. We shouldn't be here. It was a very odd
time. I went
there
a week after, and they would only let you go as far as that one road.
Tribeca.
That dead ends into it?
No, yeah, you could see the big pile. The CNN was always camped out.
Yeah, of course. It was surreal,
it was
to
weird.
Say the least.
Tribeca.
So I lived there for 2 years, had a massive breakup because I didn't realize that the boyfriend you moved there with from college would eventually dump you. I didn't think that happened. So we broke up and I just figured you're...
I know what happened if you stayed in Kansas though too. Yeah.
I was never going to stay
in Kansas. But it's more traumatic when you're away.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So I said, you know what, Dad? I'm going to come out and see you and see my brother and see
some
friends.
Go over to Manitoba's and get a new boyfriend.
Well, I came here just to visit and that was 15 years ago. I never went back.
God. Did you ever go to Manitoba's bar?
No.
A friend of mine's bar.
Where was it? Where is it?
It's on like Avenue B and 11th or 10th.
I lived right there.
Something.
How did
I
miss it? Hell. I have to go back now.
Probably were in there drinking. But
it's
are you
very
a drinker?
Possible. I'm
are
not.
You, are you a drinker?
I'm not a drinker.
She's Jewish.
Yeah. I
don't
think
don't
we
drink.
Have the enzymes. I'd rather eat, man. I'll carry it around so that people aren't like, oh, what step are you on? I'm just not a drinker.
See, here's the whole thing that Jews don't drink. A lot of my friends are Jewish and they drink really a lot.
Really?
Yeah. They don't get stupid or sloppy or be ridiculous or throw their lives away.
They get loose.
They can get excessive.
Not like people from Kansas.
No, Jews get excessive. They can do excessive things, but they don't get the momentum.
We don't lose our executive function.
I know what Gina likes, and we'll take a caller because of it.
Okay.
Right.
What does she like?
Well, we'll let you know after the break.
All right, let's do that.
I'm very curious.
Me too. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It's something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus is a natural statin, right?
That's an HMG coase reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take. I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take Bergamet with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamet Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamet.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamet.com. Or click on the Bergamet banner on our website. I suggest you do so.
Information exchanged during participation in this podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Please do not confuse this with treatment, as nothing here supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Anything promoted on this podcast is not to be in place of your usual prescribed medications. Always consult with your medical professional. Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications in internal medicine and addiction medicine. However, he is not functioning as your physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on this podcast or drdrew.com. Thank you for your support.
Okay, we're back now. So we're going to find out what Gina is. What, how did you put that, Susan?
What Gina really likes. Really
I'm
likes.
Dying to find
so
out.
So we have a guest. We have a caller. Kyle. Kyle sent an email to Susan, I guess.
Yes.
And now we've hooked up with Kyle. Kyle, what do you want to ask us?
Well, hey, man, I just want to thank you for doing these podcasts. You know, you've helped me with an entire myriad of issues growing up since my early teens. So about epilepsy, I was originally put on Keppra after I was diagnosed with epilepsy.
Yeah, how old were you when you were diagnosed?
I wasn't diagnosed till a few years ago, but I've had about 4 or 5 seizures. They're grand mal seizures, so the doctor had told me that they only come once every few years.
And let me, I'm going to interrupt you just in case I forget to say this. Is that podcast up with Greg Grunberg yet?
Yes.
Okay, we have one up with Greg Grunberg. His son has that. We did a whole, me remember. We, oh, no, was that
Weekly Infusion.
That was a Weekly Infusion. Yeah. I beg your pardon. Go to Weekly Infusion, and we talked a whole, did a whole show on epilepsy and seizures.
Grand mal is scary, right?
Yeah, very it's, scary. Well, it's generalized seizures, right? So you fall out and you shake and you go unconscious, right, Kyle?
Yeah, I have no, actually, I have no idea it's coming on, right. No aura or anything like that. I wake up in an ambulance, so oh. It's...
Are you allowed to drive?
I'm sorry?
Are you allowed to drive now?
Yes, I am now. The last one has been well over a year, so...
Right, so that's why I asked that question, because one of the reasons to stay on seizure meds is if you can stay seizure-free for a year, you can drive a car.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know... And Kyle, let's let you get into your question a little bit. And do we know... When was your last EEG?
That was about 2 years ago.
And do you have spike waves on the EEG? Can they see where the seizure's coming from?
They have not shown him. He said he would have to take me off of my medication, sleep deprive me, and put me in a hospital.
Got it. And so they have these continuous EEG monitors they do. So I'm trying to figure out why this was so hard for them to diagnose, given that you have generalized seizure. I mean, you have obvious seizuring. Why was that hard for them to go, oh, you've got seizure?
Dilantin.
Well, hold on. That's the old-fashioned stuff. Relax. Things are fancier now.
Oh, really?
That's old drug addict stuff.
I like that drug.
How hard for them to diagnose?
You know what? You said it took them only until 2 years ago to diagnose it, and yet you've had multiple generalized seizures. Why did they question that diagnosis?
Honestly, it was probably something bad on my part. I went to the hospital. I never actually, you know, really went to a neurologist to get that full diagnosis because at first, having so few, I really only thought it was, I honestly didn't know what it was.
Do you have a substance history? Because sometimes you can sort of injure yourself or precipitate seizure with substances.
I had a, I actually had a car accident when I was about 21. I broke many bones in my body. Again, I just woke up in the hospital. He was saying that could have started precipitating the seizures because I didn't start having them until I was after about 20.
So got it. Got the story. Now, what's your question now?
So, again, like I was saying, I was on the Keppra. Now I've been on Lamictal, and they put me on the clonazepam. They said that was also a, as well as a anti-anxiety.
That's
also
generic clonazepam.
Yeah.
Isn't that something Gina really likes?
It is what Gina really likes.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
So there's Susan's thing.
There it is. I thought you were going to say Diet Coke.
No, she's trying
and
to get it for you cheaper.
Together.
I had no idea it was seizure medication.
It's everything
but
oriented.
I have grown up with horrible panic attacks, and I feel like the phrase is thrown around pretty good these days. But when I was having them, it was not talked about. It was very embarrassing. Didn't know what to do. Know who to talk to.
Same thing.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I used to take it too for figure skating competitions because I'd have a nervous breakdown.
So you're doing it for like beta blockers.
But I'd only take a half of one the night before.
Oh, that's
good.
And
I was okay.
So look at how many different solutions benzos.
Benzos were not good for me.
Really?
Right? No,
well, you know, Xanax I can't take because it gives me panic attacks.
Yeah.
Nowadays, right. and I believe that these doctors are giving him Klonopin, low-dose Klonopin, to prevent what they see as a more threatening problem of grand mal seizure, right?
Right. He has seizures. He's on good medications. Lamictal, great medicine. Keppra, good medicine. These are all
you put drug addicts on Lamictal, too. For what reason?
Mood stabilizing and withdrawal. But it's
the craziest thing. Drugs are used like for any whacked out reason you want to use them.
Look over there. Don't look over there.
Bob, particularly neuroactive medications have more than one application, typically. They just typically do. I mean, for instance,
when you use the term antipsychotic for Seroquel, and you give it to a drug addict just to cheer him up a little bit.
Yeah. we're
lift the cloud a little.
We're not using cheer him up. We're using it to let him sleep and suppress withdrawal. It just happens that it works for that.
Post-acute withdrawal, agitation, irritability.
Hopefully not post-acute withdrawal, but sometimes, yeah. And you know, Seroquel, I'm not super happy about using it. It's a relatively dangerous medication, you know, it's an okay medicine. But it's not something I use casually, trust me. It was designed as a novel antipsychotic or new antipsychotic.
I mean, I think it's well determined that you're not a typical doctor. I have kids that are getting on 500, 800 milligrams a day, 8-10 months sober. They walk around like zombies. It's ridiculous. Because people can't handle or tolerate them being angry or frustrated.
Ordinary misery.
Right.
Ordinary
misery.
Seroquel, for your ordinary misery.
Well, that's what my therapist always says. She goes, you don't go to therapy to feel better. You go to therapy to get better at feeling.
Ooh.
And
I like it too. That's a $300 an hour therapist.
Right?
But I want to go back to Kyle.
Yes,
so Kyle, the Lamictal, I'm signing off on total. How much Lamictal are you on? Like 200 milligrams?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
100 in the morning and 100 at night.
And how long have you been on that?
About a year and a half. That was after I was taken off the Keppra.
All right. Keppra, again, it's a new anti-seizure.
And it's working. Is everything working or are you having trouble?
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
So, you know how bipolars are sort of...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. In a way, seizure is the same kind of thing.
Wow.
It's the nervous activity of the brain is unregulated. And Lamictal dampens it. So it makes sense. It works in seizure and bipolar. So the Klonopin was added, it sounds like, Kyle, really for anxiety, right?
Yes. Once my last seizure I had when I was working and, I'm out knocking doors and I just kind of had so much anxiety about having these seizures again, falling, cracking my head open and, possibly dying. So he said that was good for as far as anxiety, and it was the only benzodiazepine that was also a
anti-seizure. Well, Ativan is too, but you don't want to use that.
It was a self-fulfilling prophecy, like the anxiety was going to bring on the seizure?
It could. There's such a thing. Anxiety can bring on seizure, but why are you afraid you're going to die? Seizures don't kill people, not unless you fall down some stairs or something. Is that what you're afraid of?
Well, I walk when I'm in sales. I knock doors, so I walk out in the street all day long.
Okay.
So I'm on the concrete, and I just feel like
okay.
I was
okay. I get that.
Super, super anxious.
I get that. And has the Klonopin worked for you?
So it has been for the past 2 years, which kind of leads me to my question. I feel like as far as the anxiolytic properties, it's kind of, it's starting to lose its effectiveness.
I gotta Google that.
And again, for you, I want to know really what you would recommend if you could.
How much are you on?
I'm sorry?
What's the dose you're on?
I take 1.5 milligrams.
All right. What's anxiolytic? Anxiolytic means lysing, breaking anxiety.
Oh, okay.
Breaks anxiety. Anxiolytics. See, that's what he's talking about.
Stop scratching your head.
So it's not working to prevent things.
Right. So, Kyle, humbly, I would say you probably slowly creeped up to 1.5, right?
Yes, I built up a tolerance. Yeah. That's the problem with reward-centering drugs.
I know, but he's not a drug addict. He really
isn't. Saying he is. I'm just saying I don't like that reward-centering drugs are used for medical reasons. I just don't like it.
Well, it's very different with a non-addict.
Because
right?
You're going to need more. You're going to need more to have the same effect.
Yeah, that's
it's the same thing. This is almost a mental health issue, using addictive reward-centering drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the same as the pain management, Drew. Right. You're more against pain management than you are this. Well, I'm against both of them equal.
I'm with you. I'm not enthusiastic about this. Right? We're in it now. I would not have selected this for him. So here's what I suggest you do. The difference between 1.5 milligrams and 2 milligrams is sort of moot from a standpoint of risk.
Yeah, most people that I deal with take 10 to 20 milligrams.
Right, right. So,
ooh,
that's right.
Top.
So what I would suggest?
They're driving cars, just so you know.
Wow.
But you're creeping up, and inevitably the 2's not going to work either. So what you might talk to your doctor about doing is having a 0.25 milligram around for breakthrough anxiety. Like a 0.25 or 0.5 that you take occasionally so you don't start connecting the dots and creeping up. I would say that in the short term. In the long term, you need to see an expert. See a psychiatrist who can really start getting at something specific for anxiety.
And if I can just, with absolutely no medical history or knowledge whatssoever, what works for me, cognitive behavioral therapy.
CBT.
Yeah.
CBT.
So nothing has ever worked for me. Like, well, you have anxiety. Congratulations. But actually being able to go in and undo some of those knots and undo some of those charges.
Give us an example, because people have trouble getting people to understand what that is. And by the way, one of the really interesting features of CBT in any form of therapy, when they start studying what is it that's making it work, the number one most important ingredient is the empathic quality of the therapist. So
absolutely.
It always goes back to that, no matter what kind of therapy you're getting.
That makes sense.
So anyway.
For regular analytical therapy, it's like, well, now we know why, bye. But this is now we know why, what are we going to do about
and
it?
And what do you do?
We've done a million different things. I have a checklist I have to go through. How much am I distorting the situation? Is this all or nothing thinking? You know, all of these things.
Such valuable stuff.
Absolutely.
They should teach that in elementary school.
I couldn't agree more.
I agree. I have over cognitive stuff in my brain, so that stuff drives me insane.
So
let me tell you, just to give an example of how different people, what's anxiety?
AA has a version of it. It's called, why am I catastrophizing?
Yeah, doing a checklist.
Exactly, same thing.
So there's all these different.
And I catastrophize.
But you have to be a fucked up grown adult to learn these simple, everyday, great things to live by.
But hold on, in my life, anxiety, and I had disabling, paralytic panic attacks that were, I dissociated and depersonalized. I had the whole thing where I would see things down a tunnel and everything, the whole deal. And for me, it turned out the primary issue, I guess the word primary and it sort of comes in here, was a disconnection between my primary affect states and my second order understanding of them.
Okay.
So I was disconnected from feeling states, and the only thing that got
you would deny them.
No, I couldn't feel them. Like you said, you're just about learning to feel.
Yeah.
I could not identify them even.
But intellectually, you could know that you're not the guy that has that problem. Would you disconnect in that way?
No.
You understand it?
It's so funny. No.
It's very hard to explain.
Yeah, literally, if I were to walk in the room 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and somebody go, and I'm saying, I'm anxious. They go, how are you feeling? I'm anxious. How are you feeling? Mm-hmm. I'm anxious. Well, mm-hmm. are you feeling anything? Well, it's tightness in my stomach. Well, I spent 10 years in therapy with therapists going, walk in the room and tell me what the feeling is you're in your body when you walk in the room. And it took me 10 years to find them all and identify them and connect to them and have a second order understanding of them. And I maybe CBT does some of that same stuff.
Absolutely. Because I used to describe it
Bob
similarly.
Bob doesn't get it. Bob
well, I would say, it's a feeling of impending doom. You don't know when it's going to happen, and you don't know what's going to happen to you, but it's going to be horrible. And I would always say, I feel like in those moments, I'm a balloon, and I disconnect from my head, and I can see it happening.
But see, I had trouble with feeling states most all times.
Wow.
I had almost what they call an apraxia of they were having them, but I couldn't really identify. They were vague.
I would have done anything to trade for that one. Because
I feel anxiety. Oh, I can feel that. No, okay. No problem.
Okay, gotcha.
No problem. Yeah, and depression. I can feel anger. I can feel that.
Depression.
And I can feel
depression.
I can feel that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't feel the usual subtle feelings of whatever.
The warning signs. The caveman.
Just anything. Just what our body is doing minute to minute. You know, it's sort of what we're supposed to be connected to because I didn't get the things necessary to make that connection early on.
So what should Kyle do?
CBT.
Well, it's good. I hope Kyle's listening. These are two people that went and got therapy over these same issues, and they're trying to share with you. The solution is not epilepsy medicine or what medicine to take. The solution is bigger, more philosophical.
Well, and let me that's the next order is you get into philosophy. But I would even say that every psychiatric symptom outcome study shows better outcomes when you combine medication with some kind of therapy. Some kind of interpersonal something. So we would also when you see that psychiatrist,
they have Emotions Anonymous. You know?
Don't you think
it's important if you have a psychiatrist to also have a psychologist to have that's
my point.
Subscriber.
Okay. The meds and the therapy are always important ingredient. And so Kyle, we're saying talk to your neurologist or whoever is prescribing the anti seizure meds. Half a tab of 5 milligrams. You know, a quarter milligram of Klonopin for breakthrough. In the meantime, see a psychiatrist. When you see the psychiatrist, ask for a therapist. And now we're going to spend all your money. So whatever you're selling in the
that's a bummer. I'm trying to get a free help and you're like
but the one-on-one with somebody who truly can look at you and say I know what you're going through. I get it and I'm gonna walk you out of this. You just have to trust
me. An extraordinary powerful experience.
Pretty horrible. I mean, would you suggest as far as weaning off? I mean, I've gotten
wean off. You're not going to be able to wean off on your own.
No. You're so used to the drug addicts, Bob. You don't understand. It is different when you're not doing the drug addict.
Let me ask a few questions, and we'll see if he's a drug addict.
Okay. Right.
Hey, you ever snorted coke before?
No coke.
Heroin?
Definitely not. I've smoked marijuana.
On a regular basis as a teenager?
In college.
In college, you have a family history of alcoholism? Your parents, your grandparents, whatever?
No.
Okay, your parents still married?
50 years. We just celebrated.
You are not a drug addict.
Yeah.
Pretty messed
Sorry.
Up.
No, you're not
you
messed up.
You passed the test.
You passed
you
our
are
threshold.
Not a drug addict.
You're a drug addict today. No.
Even Bob's low threshold for addiction. All humans are addicts, according to Bob. So, congratulations, Kyle.
Okay.
But hold on. I would tell you that if you tried to taper off without careful management and somebody giving you something else to manage the withdrawal symptoms, you would go down by a quarter or a half milligram every couple weeks. You would make it, but you'd have lots of anxiety, lots of sleep problems. Your seizure risk would be up, and it'd be very unpleasant. And there are. Better ways to do that, okay?
Get with
the
doctor.
How long that process might take?
Well, it depends on how your symptoms go. Like I said,
maybe
a quarter to a half every 2 weeks.
I don't know
from where you are. So just do that math. That is safe, reasonably probably a quarter.
But talk
every 2 weeks.
Talk to your doctor.
Often 3 or 4 months. But it's something's got to cover you during that 3 or 4 months. You don't make it.
I would get talk therapy before I would do that.
And we're already we started our conversation, Kyle, by stepping up the amount you're taking. So you really need to get something figured out here for you.
Limits wouldn't help with my seizure threshold?
No, make it work. Well, it's coming off the Klonopin will screw with your seizure threshold unless you get somebody giving you something to make a difference for that. I mean,
Dilantin.
No, Bob. Phenobarbital.
Phenobarbital
would be
that sounds old school.
I was on that as a child for being a troubled child.
It would
child.
Be a perfect thing for
Good
him,
for
but
you.
Have to be very carefully managed, as you well know.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah. Podcast, the CBD oil that you were talking about, would that be something I would take afterward, or could it be concurrent with?
Well, that's a that.
That's cannabis, right?
Yeah, the research hasn't been done yet, so I can't even answer that yet. Unfortunately, if we had that in the lexicon, you could say, "Geez, you might be able to get down off your Lamictal too with that," but it will not do anything for the. I don't think for the Klonopin withdrawal.
I would say no to CBD, yes to CBT.
Come on now.
Yeah,
come on now.
It up.
Okay. So
all right, Kyle. Thank you very much, buddy.
Marijuana we're going to let you go, Kyle. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks a lot. It's fun to talk to you.
I have more anxiety provoking questions.
The receptor sites. How long would they take to return to normal?
They're normal now. They're not bad.
Your GABA receptor sites?
Yeah, like the benzodiazepine receptor sites.
You're not a drug addict.
he's worried about his anxiety, though. And the reality is you can have exaggerated anxiety for up to a year. So that's, again, why you need something to counteract that. And there's a lot of things that will work, trust me.
It is rebound anxiety.
Yeah, right? But you need an expert. Get an expert in that.
You need to talk to somebody.
And talk to somebody.
Talk.
All right, Kyle. Thanks for your call, buddy.
I'm sorry. Can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Now I think it's hilarious. At the time, I wanted to die. Do you remember, I don't know, it was a year or two ago, I made some joke about Klonopin on the Corolla show because I carry it with me, but I almost never take it.
As you say, it's her.
It's my Dumbo feather.
Dumbo feather. Do you know what she means by that?
No.
You don't know what you... No. Dumbo can't fly without his feather. Gives him the confidence.
But he really can. He just doesn't know
He doesn't
it.
Know that he can but fly without his feather, but he has to have his feather.
Yeah, and knowing that I can take it if I need it actually prevents me from almost ever taking it. So I made some joke about it on Corolla one time, and somebody tweeted Dr. Drew to say, are you going to talk to Gina about the fact that she's a drug addict? He called me 5 minutes later. I was mortified. And I was like, okay, the more I try to talk myself out of it, the more I'm going to convince you I'm a drug addict. So I'm just going to say thank you. I'm fine.
Did I not call you back? Or?
You did. No, you did. Okay. And we talked and I felt so much better. I was so afraid. And I don't mean to, shame people with addiction. I was so afraid of what you were going to think of me.
Oh, because my God.
He called. He goes, hey, Gina. I go, hi, Dr. Drew. So what's going on? Tweeted you that I don't know after I made a joke and I don't know how to talk myself out of this.
But if you actually had a problem, I wouldn't want to ignore that.
That was so nice of you to call me is my point. Thank you very much. Okay.
I mean, that's crazy. I get an urgent call, like, help your friend. I'm like, I'm going
to
call my friend.
Thank you. That meant so much to me.
You can't even take a Klonopin around here.
I was mortified. So thank you.
I want to get back to what you said about therapy and perceptions of therapy. Because you notice that even after a great kind of trying to help Kyle believe in talk therapy, he was not having it really. Not really.
Yeah, you're right.
He had three advocates.
It's not a fast answer.
I realize now why talk therapy is not popular in the American zeitgeist or whatever. Is because it talks too much about why. Tries to get to. I'm in treatment watching these MFTs trying to figure out why the person is what they are. So much of American typical mediocre therapy is about why what you are.
I have a very significant thing to say about this problem. You're not wrong, but I think there's a deeper issue, but I'll talk about it after the break.
Oh, boom.
Hey, and a reminder, everybody, you can check out thislifepodcast.com. You can find the podcast there as well as at podbayfm.com. And a reminder still that this is a Playroom Pods production. Also, if you want to support it, please go to drdrew.com and click through on the Amazon banner. That helps us out too. Doesn't cost you a thing, but keeps a little wind in the sails here.
And we're back.
All right,
and you're going to explain.
I'm going to explain why.
What is going on in therapy in America?
Why people resist it. Other than that, it's expensive.
Yes.
They talk so much about why, Drew.
Hold on. Yeah, I agree with you, especially for drug addicts. That's a huge mistake. But later on...
Especially for drug addicts. It's a huge mistake.
No, I know.
That's all they do in drug treatment is try to figure out why they're a borderliner, why they're a narcissist.
And how many times have you and I, through the years we worked together, counseled and made sure people didn't do that, right? I
mean, they do it now. The insurance companies insist on it.
Remember how Barry used to go insane about that stuff?
Yeah, who cares why?
All right, so particularly for the first 6 to 12 months of sobriety, particularly. Later, whatever you want to do. But so my feeling is that you get ready for this, that it's expensive, it's time-consuming, it's slow. We need things, boom, boom, boom. Now I feel better now. So that's the fundamental problem. The second issue is, at its core, psychotherapy is just sitting in close proximity to another body, another soul, another presence who deeply empathizes and deeply connects with us and our feeling states, our bodily-based feeling states that I complained half an hour ago I couldn't connect to.
Right.
You only can connect to those things by being with another person. They connect you to it. The problem is when that is ruptured in childhood, the reason we're all anxious and we don't have enough regulation is we didn't get enough of what we needed in childhood. That rupture was very painful, very. And in a weird way, your brain makes a decision that it will never expose itself to that pain again. So re-entering the frame of being close to another person, we're not having it. So it's not immediate, it's expensive, and we don't value relationships. Mm. We have no value in it. And we don't know that that's... When I try to explain to people how therapy works, their eyes glaze over.
Why do they believe man-made chemicals are going to fix them?
Because it feels better now.
Yeah, and I can't even believe this country lets you advertise them on TV. It's insane.
And by the way, let's remind ourselves that the reason they don't trust anything else, they don't want to enter the frame. They don't want to get close.
And can I give you an example to yes and you, as yes, we say on the Carolla Show?
Is that we've learned from Adam, we get our ass kicked. I wonder if Vinny's learned that.
Oh, he has. But that, you know, I have great parents. I'm very lucky. I love them dearly. They're wonderful people. That being said, you are onto something because in my anxiety state, the only way I can calm myself down is to get away from people. I have to be alone. Mm. Doesn't matter if I have to run to a bathroom, run to a closet.
And
because in that part of my mind, I know I'm the only one who can fix this.
But our original sort of little statement I want to reiterate, which is anxiety is different things to different people.
Right.
You know, you called it by your thing with your head floating off. Mine was my disconnect from affect states. And sometimes it's just genetics. Sometimes you're just prone to this stuff. But learning, gaining the capacity, and I don't want to use a word like learning, gaining the capacity for regulation, medication can be helpful, but it's that closeness to other people, another person who's skilled at getting you into the frame.
Yeah.
That's all they do. Is get you into the frame. Roland?
I know.
Pulled you into that frame, and then you're like, dude, what's happening to me?
You it was crazy.
It's the, and it's the great doctor.
The guy who helped me, well, Drew helped me so much, and Barry did, but I also, so I had two doctors I worked with every day, mm-hmm. and then a doctor that I saw twice a week. Mm-hmm. So, and that connection and that accountability, too, I would say. Mm-hmm. Because Roland, after he realized how fucked up I was, he did like a 3-month tryout with me, and then he goes, "I see clearly. Do you want to get better?"
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Serious? No.
And
that,
he said,
that's the question.
"The only way for you to get better is to see me, minimum 2 times a week, and you have to sign up for a minimum 3 to 5 years."
Yeah.
Wow. And I get that.
He was just no bullshit. You want to do this, or there's no reason for you
you're
to come here.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're all in, or you're all out. And that's the question because my therapist, when we've had, you know, I've had issues, and she goes, "I'm not getting a total vibe that you want to fix this." Yes, I do. She goes, on a scale of 1 to 100, how much do you want to fix this? I don't know, 40. Okay, so we'll talk about something else until you get to 80 or 90.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you really, somebody else outside of you can.
But there's something about accountability that I think, I don't know if I'm describing it right.
But it's interesting, though, that it's not about you spending all the time with him learning what and how and why. Mm-hmm. It was just you being present in that other person's proximity.
Yeah.
And then you gained insight into what and how, what was going on. But the experience.
I think a lot of people, I had gone to therapy for decades, obviously, mm-hmm. before, and I just would edit because I didn't think it was important or I didn't. I wanted to feel the person out before I was going to talk about that
part
stuff.
Of it,
and when I went in to him, I just was so broken. I was just like, this is how fucked up I am. Every week I would just say, everything I've thought, I thought about driving my car off the cliff just for no reason.
Security?
You know what I mean? Huh?
Nothing.
What?
Just called for security. All right, listen, let's talk to Nicole.
Push the silent
let's
button.
Talk to Nicole. Nicole sent us an email, said, my name is Nicole. I'm a 26-year-old wife, mom, stepmom. I have sickle cell disease. Many things I've dealt with. Having a father, had no interest in having a relationship with his daughter. Oh, I'm so sorry. Dealing a lot of depression, anxiety. Okay. Recently, I've been having a hard time with depression and anxiety. Any medication? Here we are, the medication thing. And Nicole, you heard our conversation. First of all, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you.
And secondly, you heard our conversation about therapy. Does that sound enticing to you at all?
Yes, it actually does, because I have not, I saw a therapist when I first started having the depression, and that was in my teen years, and it kind of, they put me on some medication for it, and I think it got to a point where they felt like it was taken care of in a way, and I stopped the medications and had been okay for years, but I think after having a child of my own, getting married, and balancing sickle cell and everything else, it's kind of crept back in. So as of right now, I don't see any therapist. I don't see anything dealing with the anxiety and depression.
And again, plenty of reasons to be anxious. Mm-hmm. Dad's gone, daughter, that's stressful, postpartum
medical
stuff.
Issues.
Medical issues. Let's talk about that for a second. How often do you have attacks on the sickle? Sickle disease.
They're actually been very often. This is the first stretch since I've had my son. He's four. This is the longest stretch up that I've ever gone without hospital, having to go to the hospital and being admitted. It's for 4 years, and that's the longest I've ever gone in my whole life. Before that, I was I mean, if I didn't go into an ER once a month to every other month, it was not normal.
And so Bob, let me explain for these guys. Hold on a second, Nicole. So sickle disease, you remember that case we had? Do you remember that guy?
Yeah, I remember that.
Really challenging cases. They're difficult because they're having to go in and
he
get opiates.
He's over this whole time. You know
I
that?
Know. I love that guy.
Right.
They have to get opiates on a regular basis, so they're going on and off these things.
Pain.
And then there's anxiety associated with that, going on and off anxiety meds. And that none of that helps anxiety and depression.
Right.
It all makes anxiety and depression worse. So are you looking just for a name of a medication now? Is that what you're looking for?
I guess I'd say yes and no. I was also looking to just, I guess for me personally, that since I haven't been on any medications for the years that I've gone without it and dealt with it, I kind of, in a way, wanted to try other things without medications, because of course with the sickle cell I already take so many medications, and it's like you're trying to get rid of the medications you have to be on for sickle cell and adding on more medications for anxiety and depression.
From what I recall, don't the doctors, they anticipate that being on these meds and the recurring remitting sickle cell is going to cause depression. They usually put people on antidepressants.
That's true. Yeah. That's very true.
Your sickle cell doctor isn't trying to deal with it, your depression?
Well, my hematologist, the last time that I had brought up to him that I had the anxiety and depression, he, I think, kind of dealt with it in a way of, okay, well, let's lower some of your medications. I think the medications might be having a big part on
it. Makes sense.
That's true. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You finish, Nicole.
I've been lowering, I've had to take a long-acting narcotic for my sickle cell for at least the past 2 to 3 years. So I have actually been trying to get completely off of that. So I am actually at a very low dose now and hope within the next month or two to be completely off of it. And I just have a little concerns of after I'm off of it, if I'm still having the anxiety and depression and that shows me that, okay, it's not all just from the medication.
Right. And we just did a whole little discussion about therapy. I would urge you to go on and see a therapist, somebody, and CBT is a great example, a great opportunity for the CBT to work here. And then as you come off, you'll be being watched by somebody who can really objectively evaluate whether or not you need a medication also. You can try some 12-step too. That's free.
Well, I was going to say, there's a sickle cell website where like a support group on the web, right? Isn't there? Do you know about this?
Oh, I'm sure there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of research, just not a lot, but I actually used to be involved in a type of support group for sickle cell, but it was also before I turned 18. So once I turned 18 and started going through the adult side of it, I kind of lost connect with it. So I've actually been wanting to find some types of support groups that are out there for other adults that have.
I think that'll help a lot.
Yes, it would. We completely agree with that.
And do you know how badly, with my nutritionist sitting in this room, I want to ask how much sugar she eats? And I'm not kidding.
Why?
Because
she's one of those people.
I'm looking at my guy right
now.
They treat
heroin. It's like heroin.
It's no, honestly, because
she's on MS Contin with sickle disease.
Well, I don't know anything about that.
But she's saying it could be caused by the sugar. No, I'm not.
I don't know anything about that. I'm saying with depression and anxiety, that's one area of my life that I've been able to keep under control.
I completely agree.
If
Nicole weren't so complicated medically, I would be way open to that conversation. And people have to look forward to the Vinnie Tortorich episode, which is coming up.
soon. You're going to love it.
So we'll have that coming shortly. All right, Nicole, thank you very much for the call. I hope that helps a little bit at least. And there are plenty
thank
of
you guys
and
so
there
much.
Are plenty of medication, probably a dual agent is what they would put you on, Effexor, you know, those things.
Okay.
You know, and there's plenty of help out there, but we think the therapy is a key ingredient and the support of peers.
It's the foundation.
Thanks, Nicole.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Dr. Drew.
Okay.
Sure.
She sounds so sweet.
Yeah,
I want everything to work out for her.
You know, Drew, I really think being a part, like when I was growing up, my parents were a part of a lot of organizations like Optimist Club.
You ever heard of the book
Rotary Club? And so they would be around people and they would talk to people. Nowadays, people don't do that. Yes.
Have you heard of a very famous book called Bowling Alone?
No.
Ooh.
It's about the dramatic drop in clubs in the United States since the 50s.
Interesting.
And it's all part of the stuff we're talking about
I think
here.
That, yeah, entering the frame with
alone.
People doesn't necessarily,
really
you don't have to pay somebody $300 to enter a frame with them.
Well, yeah.
Well, but you do, but Bob, you do if you can't, if you don't know how to enter it in a full way.
I don't think our society people don't think in terms of community and being a part of something.
And that's what's so funny because I have someone who's very, very close in my life who is in recovery and goes to daily meetings. And we'll talk about it sometimes. And if I just can't get my head right, I'll go, you know what? You're the lucky one. You're the one that gets to go start your day every morning with this amazing group of people, mm-hmm. have your affirmations, mm-hmm. get everything done. And I just wake up and go to work, you know? And so sometimes I really, really see how important
but
that is. And that can be for everybody.
Guess where most people get it. Guess where I went, Drew, last weekend? Mm. To Bible study.
Uh-oh.
With Tim Story.
Whoa.
I'm not converting or anything, but I found it so powerful and so loving and so...
Well, listen, we need
more of that.
But that's
not
what most
this,
people get out of church.
No, they get politics
community.
Out of church these
what,
days.
From a positive standpoint, what they get is community. That's what they're really looking for. It's a big piece of what church provides.
But just a side note, so many churches in America have become political hotbeds.
Forget it.
It's ridiculous.
We've over-politicized.
In Kansas...
Hey, I'm Jewish. I don't know anything about that.
We've over-politicized everything.
What did they think? You got out of there before all
Kansas
the real
is a,
crazy
a
stuff happened.
Dumpster fire sometimes when it comes to politics.
But you got out of there in this last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So now they're just going backwards in time, apparently.
Yeah, it's rough over there. And everyone I know is, sort of
so you're Jewish? What is that?
I was definitely the most ethnic thing in the neighborhood, for sure. Oh, yeah.
But I bet you back in the 80s, it was more loving and fun. And
all I remember is we were always afraid that we were going to get, our parents were afraid we were going to get snatched by someone in a van, and we had to bring our Halloween candy to a hospital. That's what I remember about being in the 80s in Kansas.
There's a lot of the 60s and 70s.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, here's what I'm afraid
maybe
of.
Maybe I'm catastrophizing, but I think times were better as people and being communities 20 years ago than they are now.
Well, certainly 40 years
and I
ago.
Think people were kinder.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, I think, there's a Jewish girl lives down the street. But then I think, but
let's
I bet you they were
her.
Kind. Now I bet you, these Jews. I swear the hatred is growing.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap this thing up.
Now at least I can say, Jew, let me Google that.
All right. Guys, Bob, I'll let you say goodbye. Thank you, Gina. Thank you
Thanks
as always.
Thanks for having me. This is
really
awesome.
Fun.
You can find Gina at Gina Grad on Twitter.
Yeah.
You can find her on the Corolla platform. Yeah. And also...
on the morning show on 100.3 The Sound, and you can go to the website, thesoundla.com.
Really
yeah, you can get radio on the internet now.
Gina's
you get
show.
Radio on the internet, Gina and Andy.
What?
And
you radio
Rock.
On the internet?
Yes. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and then also go to at Dr. Drew if you have any more questions, or drdrew.com/contact. That's how we got our callers, and I get emails.
I got a tip for you.
Yeah.
Are you doing morning radio on terrestrial?
Yeah.
Don't encourage listeners to go have sex in a church. You might get in trouble.
We're aware. It's Opie and Anthony.
Wait, let me finish plugging.
We just play music, man.
Hey, Bob, stop with the terrestrial versus satellite. This is radio.
Okay.
Radio is a tower that broadcasts.
Okay.
Sirius is some weird,
We love Bergamot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
.com for being our proud sponsor. And we also have drdrew.com where you can find all the podcasts that Drew does. in the world. And I love seeing Gina again.
I love you.
I miss
this is,
you.
This is great.
I miss you on Calling Out.
Me
but,
too.
And everybody wants you back, but I can't pay you.
Please. I just want to be where you are, and I want somebody to give me a message for my grandmother. Okay. So I'll talk to you ASAP.
All right. That's it. We'll see you next time.
Sick sense of fear.